This is Fresh Air. Few recent photographs have created the stir of the naked, pregnant Demi Moore on the cover of Vanity Fair. That's just one among the many provocative pictures taken by my guest, Annie Leibovitz. She's famous for getting celebrities to pose in audacious ways. There's her photo of an unclothed Bette Midler, covered only by dozens of roses. Leibovitz shot Roseanne and Tom Arnold mud wrestling in their bathing suits. She posed Whoopi Goldberg in a bathtub of milk. Her gallery of celebrities also includes Michael Jackson, Meryl Streep, Susan Sontag, and Václav Havel. You've probably seen her portraits in Vanity Fair and magazine ads for The Gap and American Express. For 13 years, she was with Rolling Stone and did some of their best-known covers. A retrospective of her work has been touring the country, and her photos are collected in a new book. On the cover is one of her most famous pictures, which originally appeared on the cover of Rolling Stone. It was taken just a couple of hours before John Lennon was shot. He and Yoko Ono are in bed. John is naked in a fetal position, curled around Yoko, who is fully clothed in jeans and a black sweater.
This is not anything new for the Lennons, really. They, they spent their career being photographed and televised from their bedroom, and from bed.
With their bed-ins.
Bed-ins, yes. And this was, I was asked to do the cover of John for Rolling Stone magazine. And John really felt that he wanted Yoko, there with him, that Yoko was part of him. And I really felt that they'd been together 10 years, and the story was that they had a rough time of it, and they were back together again, and they were more madly in love than ever. And I really wanted to photograph them in an embrace, and I had wanted to photograph them both nude. I mean, this was not, they also posed nude with the Two Virgins album cover. And at the last minute, Yoko decided that she didn't want to take her, she would take her shirt off, she wouldn't take her pants off. I said, well, why don't you leave everything on? And then it became this, very startling contrast of John, very naked and embryotic, curled up against Yoko, and a very, very dark figure, sort of a mother-child relationship.
You have a beautiful, very elegant photograph of Ella Fitzgerald.
Mm.
This is a photograph of her wearing a very beautifully tailored red suit. She's already lost a lot of weight from her recent illness.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really handsome photograph.
That was a wonderful day. I mean, that she had just gotten over a long illness, and she had lost a lot of weight. And that that suit is her suit. It was in her closet, and we met with her a couple weeks before the shooting, and we had the suit taken in so it fit her to the T. And that was one of these shootings where, the journalism does fall by the wayside. There's no two ways about it. I mean, she was not in the best of health. She could barely stand up, and this was her first project she had done in several months. And the real photograph, would have been astonishing to sort of see her, in a corner, barely being able to stand up. And I I wanted her to be Ella Fitzgerald. I mean, I just wanted her, to be, as best, as I wanted her to be strong and great. And she got up, and she became Ella Fitzgerald in front of my eyes. That's one of those shootings where the experience was better than the photograph. The photograph is sort of the aftermath. She was just so excited, and she felt great, and she as soon as she got the clothes on, she kept belting out, I'm bad, I asked her to sing, and she kept screaming, I'm bad, it's really amazing.
So it doesn't bother you that you're not shooting the person exactly as they are, that you're making them different from what they are, or, more healthy than what they are.
Well,
what you want is to show your image of the person, or to show them at their best.
I guess the photographer has a lot of power, in that respect. I think people should be able to look as good, or as great as they possibly can look. But I think it's about I don't want it to seem a little corny, but there is an inner beauty involved, and if bringing that out is, I mean, I'm not there. Both those pictures are Ella Fitzgerald to me. Her sitting there and in the corner, barely being able to stand up, and then standing up, you know, and looking like Ella Fitzgerald. I mean, they're both parts of her, and. And I see it all the time, and you have so many different sides of a person to decide what you're going to photograph, I know I'm not doing journalism anymore. I'm doing editorial. I have an opinion, it changes. It changes.
Let me ask you about a photo that's in a way the opposite of the Ella Fitzgerald photo. And I'm thinking of a photo that you took of Al Sharpton mm-hmm. at the hairdresser's.
Mm-hmm.
And Sharpton, his head is all in rollers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's under the hairdryer. And he's wearing one of those schmatas that's supposed to protect your clothes from your hair, as they're cutting your hair. And, who would want to get photographed with rollers under the hairdryer, let alone a man, right?
I don't think Al Sharpton would miss any opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what he was thinking, No, that came about because I had a session. We were set to meet, and then I got a call from his office, and they said, I'm sorry, but the Reverend will be an hour late. And I said, oh, really? Can we push the shooting back? I said, oh, really? Why? What is the problem? He has to go to his hairdresser's. And I said, really? And I said, where is that? And then, and they said, well, the Prima Donna Hair Salon in I think it was Brooklyn. And I said, oh, would the Reverend mind if I met him there? And they said, no, absolutely not. And I arrived there and it was right in front of me. I don't know. It's just, it was crying to be photographed, so I did.
He didn't mind. He didn't ask
no,
you to
not,
not
at
shoot
all.
Him then.
No, not at all. Actually, what the funny story about that photograph is that we were doing this for the Hall of Fame for Vanity Fair a couple of years ago, and I brought it in, and Tina was very, very excited about it. And he, when Sharpton realized that I was interested in it, and he saw that there was an interest in this facet of his life, he called up the New York Post photographer and had him come over the next day, and he repeated the same thing for him, and they ran it on the cover of the New York Post, and then Tina decided not to use the picture because it was already used. So the first time that you're seeing the picture is in the show in the book because, Tina thought it, and I said, Tina, but this is a little better than the one that ran in the Post, and... No, but the content was still there, and he sort of Tina likes to use likes to break the news. So
my guest is photographer Annie Leibovitz. You've seen her work in Vanity Fair, Rolling Stone, and in the ads for Gap and American Express. She has a new collection of photos called Annie Leibovitz 1970 to 1990. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Photographer Annie Leibovitz is my guest. I want to talk with you about some of your early work in your early days at Rolling Stone magazine when you were photographing a lot of rock musicians. You've said that in those earlier days you had crushes on a lot of the musicians you had to photograph. Did that get in the way for you?
No, I enjoyed it. I mean, I was young. I was impressionable. I'm a little older today, but if I got in the car with Bruce Springsteen, I'd still, my heart be beating a little faster. I mean, it's great to keep that, I think. When I was younger, there was more of a peer feeling, actually, especially in the San Francisco Bay Area. I knew Jerry Garcia and it was much more of friendlier time in a certain way. It's great. It's great if you're going to take someone's photograph part of the process is sort of being obsessed anyway, so you might as well, fall for it, hook, line, and sinker. I mean, it was fun to sort of have crushes and I always kept the camera on, and took photographs, but you know, that's certainly made the time go by faster, easier. And, you know, I enjoyed it. It was great.
When you were traveling with a rock musician on a tour, was there an understanding of what was going to be off limits to your camera? Would anybody, like, draw the line at the beginning of the tour and say, you could do this, but you can't photograph that?
You know, I didn't do that. I tell you what, I didn't do that much rock and roll. I actually, in 1975, when Mick Jagger asked me to be the tour photographer of the Rolling Stones and for their 75 tour, I actually left Rolling Stone for a few minutes and did the tour. And against Jan Winter's advice, he said, please don't do it. And I said, I have to go do it. And I traveled with this band of men for four or five months. And I did it, you know. I said, I'm not doing it again, you know. It's, you know, and I never really, you know, went back to it, you know, that's seriously after that. I didn't really know how music was made until I traveled with that band.
Well, there's one photo, and I think this is from that tour, where Keith Moon is backstage with about six women who were in various states of undress, and he's got, you know, one hand on one woman and the other hand on another.
He was very theatrical. You know, it's very interesting, but I found out just recently in the last couple of years that he set up the photograph for me.
Oh, really?
That photograph was that he hired a bunch of girls. He knew I was coming.
You're kidding.
And that he waited till I walked backstage, and that you know, they were these little trailers, and they just all undressed and did this thing, and then apparently I walked out of the trailer and he paid the girls and they all went home. I mean, I think it's very funny.
How do you feel about that?
I think it's great. It's great. It's great. I mean, he was Mr. Theater himself. I mean, he, you know, there you go.
Annie Leibovitz's photographs are collected in a new book. A retrospective of her work is touring the country. It opens January 11th at the Phoenix Art Museum. This is Fresh Air.